This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, preliminary results from Turkey's landmark presidential and parliamentary elections. Despite polls indicating that opposition politician Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu could prevail over longtime Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, he fell short on May 14. Erdogan garnered approximately 49.5% to Kılıçdaroğlu's 44.8% of the vote. A presidential runoff election is slated for May 28, an event which will likely determine the political, social, and economic future of this pivotal Muslim-majority NATO country. According to Al Monitor, quote, the six-party bloc led by the center-left People's Republican Party, or CHP, pledged to undo Erdogan's executive presidency, which its critics slam as a one-man rule. It also promised to reinvigorate Turkey's commitment to becoming a member of the European Union by carrying out necessary democratic reforms. And Kılıçdaroğlu pledged to restore Ankara's frayed ties with NATO and Western capitals, closed quote. Despite the fact that during Erdogan's more than two decades in power, presiding over a cost of living crisis, and the aftermath of the February 6th earthquakes that killed more than 50,000 in the country's southeast, VOA correspondent Dorian Jones says that the political momentum seems to be with the incumbent president. Well, for more on the first round of elections and what the numbers and mood portend for the presidential runoff, we turn to two seasoned regional analysts. Mustafa Akyol is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute in Washington and the author of many books, including Why, as a Muslim, I Defend Liberty. And Merve Tahiroğlu, she is the Turkey Program Director at the Project on Middle East Democracy, PAMED. That's a Washington-based research and advocacy nonprofit dedicated to democracy and human rights in the Middle East. And both join me via Microsoft Teams. Merhaba, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Yeah, thank you, Carol, for having us.
Let's begin with Mustafa Akyol. Did this inconclusive but rather strong result for Erdogan take you by surprise? What is your reaction to the first round, particularly the presidential vote?
It didn't surprise me, honestly, because although there were a lot of polls suggesting that the opposition candidate Kılıçdaroğlu could win, and there were a lot of people who hoped for that, especially in Western capitals, I could see that Erdogan's voting block is pretty solid. The people who voted him before still will probably going to vote for him. They believe he's making Turkey great and Muslim again, and they see all the problems in the country, like the inflation, like the economic despair, as a conspiracy against Turkey by outside forces, and they should stand with Erdogan no matter what. I mean, that's a very now established political narrative in Turkey that is pumped by a big propaganda machine. So Erdogan is popular, and I think he proved popular again. Of course, we will have the second round, but it is likely that he may win the second round as well, and then he may rule five more years, which will make 26 years in power. That is by far longer than any other leader in modern Turkish history. And during those years, he has shown to remake Turkey in his own image, and he'll, I think, try to do that again in the next 5 years if he wins these elections.
Turning to you, Merve, did you anticipate these results, that there would be a runoff and that the vote would be this close, Erdogan missing by just a half a percent, the 50% threshold to win outright?
Yeah, so I actually think that the results are pretty surprising. We were all watching the polls very closely, and of course, opinion polls can always be wrong. There can always be errors that are made in the process of collecting this kind of data. But I remember just 7 days ago, 12 out of 14 opinion polls in Turkey were showing the flipped results of what we actually saw happen on Sunday. And I think that was really surprising. So a lot of people expected there would be a second round, and that opposition leader Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu wouldn't necessarily win in the first round, but I think the expectation was that he would get something like 49% and Erdogan would fall down to around 45-46%. And we saw the exact opposite of that. Particularly one of the more shocking aspects of this election was the voters in the earthquake zone who were hit by this very horrible disaster, but also the nation has been talking since February when this earthquake quit about the government's role in enabling these buildings to take place due to corruption. All these buildings that crumbled with the earthquake, and the government should have been prepared for this. These permits for these buildings that were earthquake prone should never happen in the first place. That critique was happening quite widely. And also the government's very meager, inadequate response to the earthquake. We were hearing from people on the ground in these earthquake zones that the government and its aid agencies were not there in the critical first few hours of the earthquake. So you could feel a palpable sense of frustration among the public. And I think a lot of analysts looking at that assumed that in these regions, we would see people who have traditionally voted for Erdogan and his ruling party would turn towards the opposition. That's not what we saw. We saw very large numbers of people vote for Erdogan anyway, in spite of these very clear frustrations and critiques all over the country. I think the only explanation for this is, I fully agree with Mustafa, is that in this case, identity and ideology trumps rationality and reason. People ultimately ended up, looks like, voting along their identity lines, along their religious views, along the lines of their political right-wing views, etc.
Very interesting, Merve. So back to you, Mustafa Akyol, picking up on what Merve was saying in your thesis with regard to it's really about identity and ideology, and that it seems as if Erdogan is impervious to all of these catastrophes, whether it's the aftermath of the February 6th earthquake, the terrible economy. Also, he uses his megaphone, calling his adversaries terrorists, sort of taking a page from Vladimir Putin and Bashar al-Assad. Did Kılıçdaroğlu and his alliance underestimate the demagogic power of Erdogan? I mean, talk about the opposition alliance's campaign. Did they fall short in any way, or is there anything they could have done in the face of what you both are saying are identity politics at the end of the day?
I think the opposition did underestimate Erdogan's popularity in his base. They also, I think, underestimated the power of his propaganda. I mean, few people in the West noticed, but in this election campaign, Erdogan did something also very impressive. He launched a new aircraft carrier, Turkey's big new war machine. He launched Turkey's first nationally built jet fighter. And crowds, like hundreds of thousands, have come and see these things, and they were enchanted with his message that he's making Turkey a world power again. Now, I think we should see that there is a deep historical past and sense here. The people who vote for Erdogan see him as the great leader who's finally bringing the glory of the Ottoman Empire to the world stage, finally making Turkey more pious. He had his election campaign the last night he was giving evening prayers in Hagia Sophia, which he converted from a museum back to a mosque. So these messages resonate. Erdogan, even right before the elections, changed his Twitter profile with a new photo of him wearing a jet pilot uniform with sunglasses, looked like a Top Gun scene. So that is power. The other side, you could see Kılıçdaroğlu from his modest kitchen in Ankara saying onion prices are too high in Turkey. Yes, people care for that, but ultimately this selling of this glory, this greatness combined with religious values, this religious nationalism, it does have appeal. And also in Turkey, it's become very primordial. I mean, if you're a religious conservative, there are some exceptions because some people actually switch from Erdogan's side to the other side. But we see that that shifted very little in the population. If you're a religious conservative, he's your man, you vote for him. If the economy is bad, it's bad. But if somebody's going to fix it, it's still him. So you never consider somebody from the other side can be more successful. And I think for us, that's a lesson showing that if democracy becomes a war of sociopolitical tribes really despising each other, it becomes really not this reasonable game of who manages the country better. It becomes this primordial war between us and them. And I think that's challenging democracies everywhere in the world today. We see another concerning case in India, and Turkey is another case.
I would also add, Mustafa, perhaps even the United States, with the example of former President Trump also speaking on behalf of his so-called supporters, but in fact, many of his policies would adversely affect these very supporters. And then in terms of Erdogan bringing back the great Ottoman Empire, you know better than anyone, Mustafa, that the Ottoman Empire was known for its great tolerance. It was a caliphate, but still there were so many minorities. There was a lot of tolerance. So this is also a bit of a distortion. At least that's my view. But let me now turn to Merve for your take on the opposition's strategy. Where did it fall short, or because of identity politics, because of the power of Erdogan and this message and narrative, no matter what they did or could do, perhaps this alliance was destined not to prevail?
It has been a failure of the opposition's campaign, but I want to say a few words of praise here for what they did, because I think that the campaign that they ran was really a stellar example of how to push back against populism with an inclusive, pro-democracy, really democratic campaign. They really tried not to play into Erdogan's hands and continue his message of us versus them through these identities, but they tried to overcome them. They tried to bridge the gaps between various constituencies in Turkey. Kılıçdaroğlu, the opposition leader, put out all these videos addressing Turkey's religious minorities, the Alevis, Turkey's ethnic minorities, the Kurds, the youth, everyone, the conservatives, the seculars, women, LGBT. He really tried to reach out to everyone and try to show people that there is still common ground here, that we are all part of the same nation and we are stronger if only we work together and don't fall into this kind of identity politics. I think it was a really incredible campaign, and even in the face of pretty horrible identity-based attacks that they saw, they didn't succumb to that pressure. They never really changed their direction. They never decided to get angry or anything until right now. I think right now we're seeing that the opposition seems to have, since Sunday, changed its strategy, that it is becoming a much more angry campaign. They are showing that they're very angry at the government, at Erdogan, at its attempts at propaganda, deepfakes, other tactics, attempts at fraud in the election. So it's become very angry. It's become also quite nationalist tone. Kılıçdaroğlu's recent speeches since Sunday, and there haven't been that many, it's just a few of the speeches he's made, are openly way more nationalist than we've seen him in the last 2 months. He's already critiquing the number of refugees in the country and Erdogan's policy of allowing Syrian refugees to come in, the lax immigration policies of the government. He is speaking against terrorist groups. So this is all rhetoric that we didn't really see. He tried to do the opposite moving into Sunday's election. And now he seems to have taken the lesson out of the results on Sunday that Turkey is simply a country that is too nationalist for this kind of messaging, and he needs to change course. I think this is a really bad development from a democracy point of view for the future of the country, even if the opposition wins with these tactics. I think it's very, very sad to watch that these very pro-democratic, inclusive, broad campaign turn into something rather ugly like this.
You are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Mustafa Akyol, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, a think tank based in Washington, and Merve Tahiroğlu. She is the Turkey Program Director at the Project on Middle East Democracy, also based here in Washington. We are discussing the results of the May 14 general elections and the upcoming presidential runoff. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on most of your favorite podcast apps, or you may download the show at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Here's a shout out to a listener and Facebook fan, Tas Tashan from Doha, Qatar. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Let's continue our discussion about the elections in Turkey. Back to you, Mustafa Akyol. I want to pick up where Merve left off, and she was talking about how the opposition alliance sort of changed its tone and is changing its strategy in the run-up to the presidential runoff, becoming a bit more nationalistic. And that leads us to talking about the Kurdish vote. Previously, up until now, the Kurds were seen as the kingmakers. The Kurds were backing the opposition alliance, and it was considered that that could help the People's Democratic Party, or HDP. Talk about where they stand right now. Where are they going to go, in your view, given these results?
You are right. I mean, the pro-Kurdish political movement in Turkey is an important one. It has around 10% of the vote, sometimes a little bit more. And this election, they supported the opposition, which was a big boost for the opposition bloc led by Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu. However, that is also bringing another problem, and that is you have also Turkish nationalists you want to appeal to. And the further left you go, that is towards the Kurdish side, then you start to lose Turkish nationalists. And I think think we have seen an evidence of that in the rise of the votes of the Turkish Nationalist Party that is on Erdogan's side. So it's really a difficult, and I think ultimately Turkey will be healed at some point, I don't know when, but when political views are not really based on these primordial identities, like I am Kurdish, therefore I vote for this. I am religious conservative, therefore I vote for Erdogan. I am a bit more secular or Alevi, then that's my party. So when you do that, it all then becomes a matter of who has more people on their side. It's a matter of demography then it becomes. And the Turkish society, it's always a fact that conservative, right-wing, Sunni majority is more than half of the votes. And Erdogan has been able to put that together and has been surfing on that. You pointed to the similarities between President Trump and President Erdogan. That's quite true. The big difference is President Trump was able to rule for 4 years. Imagine what would happen if he went on for 25 years and turning like every newspaper in the United States into, say, a Breitbart and making his theories about conspiracies against him the official view even of the judiciary. So that's what happened in Turkey. And I think this is a lesson in keeping democracies safe with checks and balances, with rule of law, with independent judiciaries, with free press. What has happened in Turkey is that Erdogan reduced democracy to merely ballots, which he has been able to win, but then it becomes the tyranny of the majority, which is giving big euphoria maybe to that majority, but making the rest of society quite depressed and anxious.
Indeed, a very good point. And turning back to you, Merve, because we talked about the Kurds, how they were important, particularly with respect to the opposition alliance. Nonetheless, Erdogan's party, AK Party, has gained a majority in the parliament. But now, notwithstanding the Kurdish support, perhaps for the alliance and for Kılıçdaroğlu in the upcoming presidential runoff, now we have another so-called kingmaker, potentially, the ATA alliance leader, Sinan Oğan. He garnered 5.3% of the vote in this first round. Who is he? What does he stand for? And how could he make the difference?
So this is a great question. And I have to admit, I was one of those people who figured I don't really need to pay attention to this man ever until he got 5% of the vote. It was a pretty shockingly high turnout for him. Look, I think a lot of the people who voted for him look like these are protest votes. These are people who wanted to neither vote for Erdogan nor Kılıçdaroğlu, so they went with the third option. It's very unclear to me that Oğan will be able to, if he says, I'm going to put my support for the second round behind Erdogan or Kılıçdaroğlu, it's very unclear that the people who voted for him will actually follow that directive. I'm not sure that he has that kind of pull. But what he does show, he's a very nationalist. I think he's too secular to be able to support Erdogan, but too nationalist to be able to support this opposition coalition. And he represents that in-between faction in Turkey. And apparently, this is a very sizable bloc. Kılıçdaroğlu is clearly responding to what we saw on Sunday by turning more nationalist. He clearly feels that he needs to get these 5% of voters. And in order to do that, he has to take a more nationalist tone, rhetoric, and perhaps policies. But he is risking, by doing that, losing the support of the Kurds, which is about 10% of the voting bloc. We're just speculating at this point, but I think it will be very hard for the Kurds, no matter what Kılıçdaroğlu does at this point, not to vote for him, because the Kurds have suffered so much under Erdogan's rule, especially in the last 7-8 years. They really feel that their democratic rights have been taken away. Their towns have been turned into war zones because of Erdogan's political ambitions and honestly nothing else. So I think the Kurds are the constituency in Turkey that have suffered most under Erdogan, which is why they even voted for Kılıçdaroğlu, who from their point of view is already too nationalist, representing a too much of a nationalist political party. Given how much they have to lose, I think they will still vote against Erdogan. So this is really what I'm expecting, no matter what Kılıçdaroğlu does, even if he turns very nationalist, although we don't know. I mean, part of my worry with the right-wing turn and nationalist turn in Turkish politics since Sunday that we're seeing including with the composition of the parliament, is that this could really push Kurdish nationalist sentiments and make a large part of the Kurds, especially the young Kurdish voters, feel like they have no common future left with Turkey, even participate in this democratic process, which I think would be the worst thing. I just want to say one more thing, because we've been discussing about the polarization in Turkey, and Mustafa rightfully mentioned that Erdogan has been riding this wave. But I think it's very important to make very clear to our audience, he's not only rode this wave, he also used every apparatus of the state under his control to fuel this polarization, these identity politics. But Kılıçdaroğlu did a lot of things to try to change that. I mean, he allied himself with an Islamist leader. This was a big shock. You know, it's not like he went to this election alone. He allied with five other parties, all of whom represent a very different part of the electorate in Turkey, including a lot of these people are very nationalist, very right-wing, and religiously conservative. And that formula didn't work. When we ask why that failed, we have to take into account what an unfair playing field these people faced going into the election, that Erdogan has been fueling polarization and the idea that the opposition will never change. It is stuck with this particular secular identity, and no matter what they do, they will not represent the conservative voter. This message has been propagated by Erdogan, his media, 90% of Turkish media, by his ministers, including the interior minister, and people are supposed to be neutral when it comes to elections, that this has been spoon-fed to the population. So I think this is a huge reason why the opposition's campaign failed to depolarize.
It's a very interesting point, because there's an uneven playing field. Erdogan has taken advantage of that using the megaphones. He's jailed so many journalists. The press isn't free for the most part. And so that, in addition to all these other identity politics, back to you very quickly, Mustafa Akyol, to talk about Sinan Oğan, the fact that a lot of people voted for him, and according to Merve, that was a protest vote. But what about this predicament that he is too secular for Erdogan at the end of the day, but too nationalist for Kılıçdaroğlu? I mean, how much influence will he wield at the end of the day? Does Kılıçdaroğlu, in your view, have a potential chance, even moving further to the right, to the nationalist sentiment, contrary to perhaps what he would like to do in this final round?
I think Merve is quite right on that. I mean, in describing Sinan Oğan, too nationalist and too secular for both camps. I mean, he's honestly a very disturbing figure politically. I mean, all his campaign is just opposing any reform on the Kurdish question, and also very anti-Syrian. Syrian refugees is a part of the political landscape in Turkey, and there are millions of refugees from Syria or from other parts of Asia, and like expelling them back. It's a part of the far-right narrative. And Kılıçdaroğlu is now trying to voice that to some extent in these days, which is, I think, disturbing to me as someone who had better hopes from him. He's clearly trying to get Sinan Oğan's votes. The man also said, you know, he will actually bargain with two sides and see what comes out. He's also into this, like, what can I get out of this mood? I wouldn't be surprised if some of the votes that went to Sinan Oğan goes towards Erdogan's sides naturally. Some of them goes to the other side, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu's sides, which means it is, I think, unfortunately for me, likely that Erdogan will win this race. When you look at the numbers, that's, I think, what we're going to see on May 28th in the second round of the selection.
The last word to you, Merve.
I will agree. I think Erdogan is at a huge advantage here moving into the second round. He just needs a few more votes in order to be able to declare himself the next president again and stay there for life. I think the nationalist voters who are unhappy with Kılıçdaroğlu, they are, in my opinion, currently likely to go and vote for Erdogan. That could change regardless of what happens on May 28th. The election has shown that there is a 50% of this country, almost half of this country, wants change. And I think no matter what, moving forward, that's not going to go away. We're not talking about 1% of the country. We're not talking about 10% or 20. We're talking more than 40% who want something different, who want a more democratic future in Turkey. So Erdogan has become a very authoritarian figure. I think he's going to become even more authoritarian moving forward if he wins on May 28th. But his job is not going to be so easy given the level of resistance he's facing among the Turkish people.
A conversation to be continued after May 28. I look forward to having you both back. For now, though, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my terrific guests, Mustafa Akyol, Senior Fellow at the Cato Institute, and Merve Tahiroğlu. She is the Turkey Program Director at the Project on Middle East Democracy. Thank you both, teşekkür ederim, for a great discussion. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America. Thank you.